Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think we really got something here.
What do we got?
An idea.
What idea?
An idea for the show.
I still don't know what the idea is.
It's about nothing.
Right.
Everybody's doing something. We'll do nothing.
The Nightcap.
They say, what's your show about? I say, nothing.
There you go.
I think you may have something here.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
It is my last show of the week, given that the Bills and the Lions are just about 24 hours away from playing preseason game number 3 in Detroit. What's up? It's the Nightcap. Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Got a packed show for you tonight. I got a lot of stuff I want to get to. Some sports stuff, some non-sports stuff, some fantasy Bills, of course, with the game tomorrow, and also a little bit of college football sprinkled in along the way. 803-0550, as always, for your thoughts. You can also get a hold of me on the text line at 550-550. I'll be scouring through that throughout the night. And also on Twitter, at SneakyJoeWGR. You can follow me there, at SneakyJoeWGR on Twitter. So, we got a couple of preseason games tonight. If you're not familiar, there's actually a story that's kind of going, that's floating around social media right now. Mike Garafolo, most recently of NFL Network, had something on this, that the Raiders and Packers, who are scheduled to play a preseason game in Winnipeg, Manitoba tonight, are that might be in question. It might be in question. He is reporting that right now there's been, and this is, there's been other people reporting this on Twitter too, that there have been multi-hour meetings about the field conditions. And you might be thinking back already, just me saying, there's worry about the field conditions. Last year, there was a game scheduled to be played in Mexico City between the Chiefs and the Raiders. And it was a story for over a week on, you know, what's the field going to look like? Is it safe for the guys to play? And then there was some talk of, okay, these teams are going to start resting their guys because they don't want them to play on these field conditions. Ultimately, the game was not played in Mexico City. Well, here we go. We got a game in Winnipeg, Manitoba. They've got a football stadium. They've got a football field. But think about Canadian football for a second. What's one thing they have that the NFL does not that could cause a problem with the field? Their end zones contain a goalpost right in the middle of them. Like old school NFL, their field goal posts are in the middle of the field, in the end zone. And here is the tweet from Mike Garafolo. Word out of Winnipeg is that the Packers are mulling holding their starters out of tonight's game entirely versus the Raiders with field conditions in question. Again, Oakland was planning to sit key players. And then he says, the other thing being mulled is an 80-yard field to avoid the end zone, where, you know, there's a patch of grass that they tried to fill in over where the end zones usually are for Canadian football. Few people seem to not know how that'll even work. Stay tuned. That from Mike Garafolo. So, there is another attempt by the NFL to kind of grow the game internationally. They do it in London every single year. There never seems to be too many hiccups with that. They had the failed attempt to grow the game in Mexico last year with the game in Mexico City that ultimately did not happen. Now, the Bills had been in Toronto. They had the Toronto series. But since then, there's really never been a game in Toronto or in Canada entirely. So here we go. We're going to give them a preseason game. We're going to get them a little taste of NFL football. We're going to get them going. And completely bungled by the NFL. This is three times in the last 5 years, maybe even less than that, a couple of years, that they have had to cancel games at fields that aren't traditionally played with NFL football. Remember, there was a Hall of Fame game a couple years ago where the paint in the middle of the field was all screwed up and the players didn't want to play on it and they canceled the Hall of Fame game. Then last year, of course, with the Mexico City thing that I mentioned. Now, right now, with the Winnipeg thing, hey, they might cancel this game altogether. They might play in a shortened field. And it's just, How do you not have this stuff done ahead of time? Because me personally, like, this fired me up a little bit more than I thought it would. Because it's not just that, oh, you're trying to grow the game. I don't really care about them trying to grow the game as much. Like, that's not really my problem with it. My problem is with it, the NFL, they, you know, they're going to charge a lot for their tickets, right? But as Warren Sharp pointed out, that the amount of money being charged to fans in Winnipeg who were hoping to see this game, the cheapest ticket on Ticketmaster, where the tickets were being officially sold, not the secondary markets, but where you could officially buy tickets for this Raiders-Packers preseason game, the cheapest ticket was $127. And as Warren Sharp points out of Sharp Football, a normal Packers-Raiders regular season game, the last one they had, which I think he said it was in Green Bay, cheapest ticket was $111, and that was regular season. As he also points out, the Grey Cup CFL Championship game, $112. The NFL was charging more for a Packers-Raiders preseason game than a Packers-Raiders regular season game, and more than the most important game in Canadian football. Not a good way to grow your international fan base. So at the end of the day, I'm calling the NFL out on not truly wanting to grow the game. It's all a money grab. And that is complete, that is evidence by what they were charging for these tickets. And I feel bad for anybody in Winnipeg, who I assume would not be listening to me right now, but I feel bad for anyone in Winnipeg that would have paid that amount of money for tickets to a preseason game, and then ultimately the result, the thing you're actually going to get on the field is going to be no starters. Like, you're not even going to get Rodgers for a series. You're not even going to get Derek Carr for a series. You're not even going to get Devontae Adams. You're not going to get any of them. And you might not even get it on a full-length field. It might not even look like NFL football. It's just a whole, it's a whole thing going on in Winnipeg right now that I just think is, it's a crap. It's a crap show. Like, how can you not have that done ahead of time? So I had to get that out of the way because it's been annoying me since this story started emerging about an hour or two ago. And here we are again, the NFL trying to grow the game internationally, and they can't even play because the field's not right. Second time in less than a year. All right, so on the Bills, because that's where we're going to spend most of the night tonight. I want your thoughts at 803-0550, thinking about what you're looking forward to in tomorrow night's game. Is there a guy you think can win a roster spot tomorrow? Is there a guy that's on the verge of winning a roster spot that maybe you think wouldn't otherwise? And I have a couple of guys for that. So Christian Wade, so far, I put this out on Twitter, and Christian Wade's been the most popular answer. At the end of the day, I would have to say Christian Wade, just I don't think there is a scenario where he can make this team. I just don't see it. I think you would need two guys that are here currently to be gone. That would be a McCoy trade. That would be Gore being cut. That would be an injury to somebody. That would be Yeldon being cut. And he would have to show over a larger sample size that he can be as productive as he's shown in the first couple of weeks with some big plays. All of that would have to happen before I can really get on board with thinking, all right, this guy can really make my team. So I'm not thinking Christian Wade for this. But a couple of guys I am thinking about that I'll tell you about here. And both of them, honestly, are wide receivers. It's a position I've been thinking a lot about. I think it's a position a lot of Bills fans have been thinking a lot about because we don't really know how it's going to shape up past John Brown and Cole Beasley. And one guy that had flown completely under the radar, hadn't heard anything about him in training camp, hadn't seen him in the first preseason game, had basically been a ghost since the Bills signed him in the offseason from the CFL, was Duke Williams. And once Duke Williams signed, the first thought in my mind was, all right, this guy's name sounds familiar. I go to Google, I search him up, I see, okay, Auburn, that's right, Auburn. And he was undrafted, but what I remember was that he was a second, or he was projected to be like a late first, early second round pick during his draft year, but because of his off the field issues, I think he got kicked off the team at Auburn, that he ended up not being drafted. So, that happened, but you know the talent is there. He was a guy that I was excited about to see what he could do. Maybe he'd be nothing, but I thought there was some potential there. A guy that led the CFL in receiving. There have been receivers, there have been players around the league that come from the CFL and are somewhat productive. Cameron Wake comes to mind in Miami, had a long career after that. I mean, if you want to go way back, Doug Flutie, or a more recent example at Duke Williams' position, Dontrell Inman, who, you know, he's not a great wide receiver, but he is a guy that's been decently productive around the NFL. There was a story when he got released by the Patriots this past week. He demanded his release after Josh Gordon was reinstated, didn't think there'd be enough opportunity for him to catch the ball. And now the Jets might be about to sign him, and he might become one of their starting wide receivers. That's a guy that was in the CFL a couple years back. Now he's an NFL player. And that's, at the end of the day, I think all you'd want out of a signing like that. Can I at least get an NFL player? And if not, I didn't give up anything to get him. Duke Williams is a guy that I had that thought about. Duke Williams is a guy that seemed to have a higher ceiling even than that because of what his draft status was and the reasons he was in the CFL in the first place. It was not his talent. It was off-the-field issues and stuff like that. So, with not much at wide receiver and an opportunity to win a roster spot, why haven't we really heard from him? We hadn't really heard from him, right? And I think what Sean McDermott laid out after the last game, or maybe it was Brian Daboll, more maybe it was both of them, I thought made a lot of sense. They started to feel like, all right, you know, Tyree Jackson, he's coming along, but he's a project. He's not really all that consistent right now, especially in game action, not getting a lot of practice reps. They wanted to see Duke Williams. They wanted to see these other wide receivers, Cam Phillips, David Sills. They wanted to look and see what these guys could look like with Matt Barkley, who, through 2 weeks, amazingly, not even amazingly, it's a preseason, but through 2 weeks, Matt Barkley is the best quarterback in the NFL preseason so far, according to Pro Football Focus. So you know he's getting his receivers involved. It's a nice opportunity for those guys to show what they can do. Meanwhile, Tyree Jackson, who clearly struggled in the first game, had has had an up and down training camp, mostly inconsistent. Let's see what these guys can do with a little more consistency, with a little bit better version of a quarterback right now in Matt Barkley. First game, you see that with Duke Williams, and he catches a tremendous touchdown, a type of touchdown that really not a lot of other guys on the team, I think, are capable of. Barkley puts it over the cornerback's head, and typically, if you listen to my show a lot, I am piling on with the trend of I don't need my receivers to have a big catch radius. What I need them to be able to do is separate, and I need them to be able to get open. And I think that is absolutely the way I think about that position and what I want at that position. But from what I saw last week from Duke Williams, it doesn't strike me that he's just big lumbering and he can't really get open like that. He doesn't look like Kelvin Benjamin to me or Andre Holmes. Slow, not very quick, hard to get open. Every time the ball was thrown to Benjamin, every time the ball was thrown to Andre Holmes, the reason I didn't like them as our starting receivers is because they were never open. Never. And Duke Williams, while I don't think that's his forte, he's not a guy that's always going to be open. I think what you saw in that touchdown is he gets just a little bit of separation, and then the catch radius part of it does come into play, and then that begins to matter because Barkley was able to put it a little bit over the cornerback's head, way over the cornerback's head, and even a little bit over Williams' head. But he has the athleticism, he has the catch radius, he has the size to go up and get it. So typically, I don't want a lot of wide receivers like that, I will admit. But one's okay. One's fine, especially when the Bills do not have, at this point, an athletic tight end that I think you could count on being productive at the beginning of the season. They have Tommy Sweeney. He's shown nice, all right, but he's a seventh-round rookie, and it's the preseason. So how much do I really want to count on that? Dawson Knox, third-round pick, a lot higher, right? A lot better athleticism, but didn't really do anything in college. Plus, he's banged up. He's been injured. He's been missed a lot of training camp. What am I supposed to expect out of him week one? Tyler Kroft, even. He did some stuff in Cincinnati. He's big. He's a little bit athletic, but never been that productive in his career. He's missed all of training camp. I don't even know when he's going to be coming back. They don't have that at tight end. They don't have that type of weapon at that position. They also don't really have it at wide receiver other than Duke Williams. So to me, he presents something that they otherwise do not have. And he could be a good version of it. Because he seems to be pretty athletic for his size. It's not just that he's a big body receiver. He seems to be a pretty athletic big body receiver. So, after last week, at the very least what I think he did, showing off on that touchdown and having a couple other nice plays too. There was one that Cover One, there was a play that Cover One tweeted out that he was lined up at receiver, but it wasn't even a route, it was a block. And he pushes the safety so inside that it opens up a lot of space for the Bills running back. Like, he had some nice plays, not even just through the passing game. What he did was at least show enough to where maybe he could win a roster spot with a really good performance tomorrow. And even into week four. Because I'm assuming he'd get a lot of playing time in the fourth week of the preseason. Is that opportunity there for him? I think it is because of how thin they are. They're not even really thin. They're very crowded at wide receiver. But that, to me, seems to be a position where it's still open for business. There is still an opportunity for him to win a spot there. Beasley's locked in. Brown's locked in. I think Jones is mostly locked in. I don't even know what to think about Robert Foster at this point. I'd like to say he'd make the team just based on what he did at the end of last regular season, but if he doesn't show anything in training camp and he doesn't show anything in preseason, and you've got guys behind him like Isaiah McKenzie, who's the other guy I'm going to get to in a second, who's always open and always making catches, or Duke Williams, who is giving you something you don't otherwise have, do I start to think about Robert Foster? Do I start to think about Zay Jones? Because if Andre Roberts is on this team, if he's on this team as a returner, I would not lock him into a spot, but it sounds like he's locked into a spot. Then what are we talking about? Are we talking about one spot that's up for grabs, or could there be two? Because at the end of the day, even though all this I just said about Duke Williams, I'm very intrigued by him. I am. I would still keep Isaiah McKenzie right now over him. If I'm going to keep six wide receivers, my six are Brown, Beasley, Jones, Foster, Roberts, just because I think he's going to be here no matter what. I wouldn't have him here, but he probably will be. So Roberts and then McKenzie. That'd be my six. No Sills, no Phillips. If maybe you want to squeak one of them onto the practice squad, fine. But I don't need them here. Williams, he's intriguing to me, at the very least. And intriguing with some production, with some flashy moments in the preseason, with a good camp, which hasn't quite happened. But I wouldn't say he's had a bad camp. It doesn't sound like he's just, you know, doesn't really get it. Maybe that's enough for him to get a spot. Last season, the Bills kept Robert Foster because of his intrigue, because of his skill set, because of his athletic ability, because as a deep vertical threat, he kind of presented something the Bills didn't otherwise have. Last year, Robert Foster kind of was what Duke Williams is right now. A unique talent they don't otherwise have. Is that enough of a tiebreaker if he closes the gap with the other guys to make this team? My guess would be no, but I think it's still out there for him. Earlier in the offseason, my thought on Duke Williams was not even that much earlier, like a couple of weeks ago. I thought the way the receiver spot was shaping up, for Duke Williams to make this team, I thought he was going to have to beat out Zay Jones. I thought that was going to have to happen. And I really haven't heard, read, Sal, haven't heard a lot of anybody really sound very optimistic or real. Sounded like Zay Jones being cut's a realistic idea. It hasn't sounded like that. No one said it's impossible, but trade maybe? I don't know. I'm wondering if Duke Williams can have a performance good enough tomorrow to be able to get on this team. And McKenzie, I'll get into him a little bit after the break. I want him on this team. I want Isaiah McKenzie on this team. I think he's good. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. 803-0550 is the phone number. Who do you got? A player that you think is on the verge of making this team that might not be quite there yet, that you think with a great game in a third preseason game or even a fourth preseason game, who's left that can still win a roster spot or is close to? It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. Keep the calls coming after this on WGR.
different role than Josh was last year. He doesn't necessarily get a ton of practice reps as the weeks go on. Josh is getting a lot of those. Matt's getting a lot of those. He plays more sometimes in games than he does in practices. So the timing, the decision making, you know, that's a work in progress for him. He's done a good job. He works hard. I know he'd like to have a few of those playbacks, but he's working hard.
That is Brian Daboll, the Bills offensive coordinator, talking about Tyree Jackson, the undrafted quarterback out of UB for the Bills, who, yeah, has had a tough preseason so far, to say the least, and didn't sound like he was having a very good camp before that, so his spot might be in question, not for the active roster. I think I'd be stunned if he even had a shot at that at this point, but maybe even his practice squad spot might be in question. I would like to think that, you know, you got 11 guys on your practice squad, or it's 10, but you'd make room for one quarterback. You could have one other guy that knows the system and one other guy that does have a similar skill set to who your starter is. And I think that would be of some sort of value to the Bills, to have a guy like that, to have a developmental quarterback that is similar to who the starter is. Long-term, who your backup is, I think you would want that. So maybe Tyree could get a practice squad spot just off that, but he certainly hasn't done anything in the preseason so far to warrant it. So he's not really on my list of guys I'm thinking about who could make this team that might not have won a spot yet, but it might be on the verge of. Duke Williams is a guy for me for that. Isaiah McKenzie is maybe the biggest guy for me, though. I really want Isaiah McKenzie on this team. I think he's good. I think he is legitimately good. I think he can be dangerous with the football. I think he's a good returner. I think he's good in the slot. I think he's very versatile. And they used him a lot on jet sweeps last year at receiver. Cole Beasley is almost for sure. He's definitely taking that spot. So that's the Bills slot receiver. But there is something to be said for when last year, when Allen and the Bills and Brian Daboll started transitioning to a spread offense, opened it up a little bit, who was the safety guy? Who was the safe check down option that Allen generally looked to? And it was McKenzie. They used him. They used him a lot down the stretch, and I thought he was good. So, is he amazing? No, but he was part of the reason I didn't really understand why you needed to bring in Andre Roberts. Because I like McKenzie as a returner, and I like what else he can do on the field. Roberts, they're trying to prop him up right now as a wide receiver, but there's a reason the guy really hasn't done it on a full-time basis in 4 or 5 years. There's a reason for that. There's no upside there. That's part of the reason. The other part is he's not that good at it. And maybe McKenzie doesn't end up being that good as a strictly wide receiver, but he's young. I would say there's upside there. There's athletic ability to be used. So I would like to see him on this team just for that reason. Now, he doesn't present a unique type of skill set like Duke Williams does, who I spent most of the last segment talking about, as an option for the Bills to keep around. Williams gives you that. The big body physical receiver, McKenzie, is kind of similar to Cole Beasley and Andre Roberts. So you've kind of already got what McKenzie gives you. But there's a reason the guy's always like getting open, even in the preseason. He's the guy making catches. How many snaps did he play last game? Like 4, 5, 6? He didn't play a lot. And he had that one big catch. So he always seems to be showing up on the field and doing something. So I'd like to see McKenzie here. As I said before, I think he would be my 6th wide receiver at this point to keep around. But me personally, I would like to keep McKenzie and Duke Williams over Andre Roberts. Just doesn't seem like to me that's something that they're going to do. Running back is interesting too. I've had a couple people text in for their guy and who they think is on the verge of making the team. And a couple of people have said Marcus Murphy. And I think that one's interesting. And I actually kind of like that one. Marcus Murphy is kind of flown under the radar this preseason. He actually switched his number. He got a carry in the first game. I'm like, oh, who's that? That guy's pretty fast. Who's that? And I think Nate Geary was in here. So, oh, it's Murphy. I'm like, that's Murphy? Like, he switched his number from 45 to like 20 or 22 or something. So, you know, thinking about him, what has happened in front of him? What's funny is the two guys that probably had the best chance of taking away his roster spot as like the 4th running back / 3rd running back who plays special teams. Who were those guys? It was Yeldon, who has been like the 4th running back on the depth chart all offseason. He fumbled in that first game. Now, I thought he bounced back in a good way in the second one, but he did fumble in that first preseason game, and we know that Yeldon doesn't present them anything in terms of special teams, so there's not a lot of versatility there. That's why even maybe Yeldon's more in competition with McCoy and Gore. So maybe he would need a trade to stick around here. But Snorris Perry, too. And it sounded like, you know, they signed him in during the spring, and he got talked up a lot as like a good special team option for the Bills, a little bit of a bigger back. He fumbled last week, too. Now, he's done pretty well on special teams, seemingly, but he fumbled. And if you get down to the nitty-gritty, you get down to the bottom of your depth chart, which can happen. I mean, Keith Ford started a game for the Bills last year, kind of. McCoy didn't play the first snap, but Keith Ford got some carries at the end of last year. Sometimes you get down that deep. And if that happens, do you want a guy in Snorris Perry, where if you look at his career, he's been around the block. I mean, he's been around for a few years. He was in Miami before the Bills. He was in Chicago. He's 28 years old. What's funny is, actually, I need to do a bit of a deeper dive into Snorris Perry's career, because he went 4 years without playing in the NFL. Something happened in between there. I wonder if he was playing in another league or something along those lines, but there were four years in between him playing football. I guess not. Oh, practice squad. That's why. So he's not really been very impactful as a runner in his career, and he's not really had much experience getting carries. He's been more of a primary special teams guy, which to me does not make him very versatile at all. 8 carries in your career. You're 28 years old. So what am I doing? Whereas Marcus Murphy, who you know can play special teams because he's done it last year, him and Tywan Jones at running back kind of split it up. But once Tywan Jones went out, Murphy was the guy who was their primary running back who played special teams. He, throughout his career, you know, a little bit more. Last year in particular. Last year, he finally got some experience to run the football. And to me, not much of a coincidence, he led the Bills in yards per carry. Over Ivory, well over McCoy. 52 carries. You know, not a huge sample size, but not insignificant also. 52 carries for 250 yards. Behind that offensive line, the guy almost averaged 5 yards a carry. So I think at the very least, you should expect that guy can at least hold down the fort if you get ravaged with injuries. Snorris Perry, I don't really know. 8 career carries and a fumble last week in the preseason. So maybe Murphy, with the two guys ahead of him having some fumbling issues in the preseason and having some question marks about their versatility, maybe Murphy sneaks back into the conversation. Maybe he carves out a roster spot for himself, but behind Singletary, Gore, and LeSean McCoy. So at running back, he's the guy I'm looking at. Christian Wade, as I said before, I just don't really see an opportunity for him to make this team. Because not only does he not know the sport, he doesn't have the versatility. He might be good at special teams, he might be good as a returner, but he doesn't really know how to do it at this point. He's bound for the practice squad for me almost for sure. And then one last position I wanted to get into on like who could make the team and who might have the opportunity to do so. You know, for me, I'm not so sure they would cut Tommy Sweeney at this point. I'm not so sure that would happen. But Jason Kroom, like, what are they going to do with him? Because to me, he would be the odd man out right now. What Sweeney has showed, his ability to kind of fill in as the starting tight end, both in practice and in the preseason. You know that Croft is going to be here when he's healthy. You know Dawson Knox is going to be here when he's healthy. Third round pick, big free agent signing. Lee Smith always has been the question mark here for me. Whose roster spot does Sweeney take? Now, Lee Smith does have a little bit of guaranteed money. The thing is, the Bills have a lot of cap space, and it doesn't really matter if they owe him guaranteed money. They don't need to keep him around. So I wonder if he does even make this team, because what Sweeney presents is not just a pass catcher. In fact, that's not even his forte. He's caught some passes. You saw last week, he had a couple of big plays, some nice catches. But the guy's a blocking tight end. He's one of the few tight ends in college football, because of where he went to school, that got a significant amount of work and experience as a blocking tight end, because that's the type of offense that Boston College runs. So he can do that. He can block. If he presents that for you, then why do I need Lee Smith? if Sweeney can do that spot. Because Kroom, while he's not near the blocker that those two are, Kroom's at least intriguing to me because he could be another pass-catching weapon. So if I'm going to keep four tight ends, which might be that might not happen. You never know. Maybe DeMarco, who knows how they're going to carve out the roster, how many positions they keep around at each. But if they keep four tight ends, Knox, Croft, I don't see how Sweeney doesn't make this team at this point. And if it came down to Kroom versus Lee Smith for me, even though Kroom has had some injury concerns, I'd keep him just because when it comes down to it for me, I guess, just personally, I'm always going to want to keep the pass-catching tight end over the blocking tight end. I'm always going to want to do that. So that's how I would chalk up the tight end position right now. But Kroom's got to get back in games. He's not healthy right now. And we know one thing. If Croft's hurt and Knox can't stay healthy, then maybe Lee Smith would get the roster spot just because of his availability, which they've talked about valuing a lot. I'm not sure, though. You know, they talk about availability all the time, but I'm still not quite sure how much it really does matter to them because a lot of their free agent signings in the past couple years have been guys with recent major injuries. Kevin Johnson, that corner, missed a bunch of games. Tyler Croft missed a bunch of games with a foot injury. Now he's injured again. John Brown had some injury concerns earlier in his career. Cole Beasley, same thing. Not Cole Beasley. I'm thinking of last year, not even the same side of the football. Trent Murphy, the torn ACL, and coming back from that. Like, they have not really shown that they really act on their words there, where availability is ultimately important to them. I'm not saying it's not important, but they've shown that if the talent is there, that they'll make a decision and they'll keep the injured guy if they think he's better. So that's kind of how I see the tight end position developing as it stands. 803-0550 is the phone number. I got a bit of a ranking that's not really sports related that I want to run through when we come back. If you follow me on Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR, you may have already seen it. And in the second hour, we'll get back into the Bills for sure because I want to get to the guy's name's escaping me all of a sudden. Why? Jeff Legwold from ESPN was on with One Bills Live earlier today. I thought it was a really good interview. So we'll get to that later in the show. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. I want your calls at 803-0550. It's the Nightcap on WGR.
I'm totally happy with the ability to come in and learn from a guy like Drew, you know, who's been such a great friend and such a great mentor. And I still have the opportunity to play, you know, which I'm really excited about.
That right there is the biggest thorn in the side of any fantasy owner almost ever. Like, the biggest of vultures in fantasy football. That is Taysom Hill of the New Orleans Saints. He is the third string quarterback for the Saints that plays like 15 different positions. He's played tight end. He's played receiver. He's played running back. He's played quarterback. Wildcat quarterback, gunner, all of it. And that guy, if you are a fantasy owner of Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas or Drew Brees, there's not really a tight end there. I think you'd want a Jared Cook. If you're a Jared Cook owner, that's a guy that there's going to be a time or two in the regular season where you're pulling your hair out because they're giving it to him. But, you know, that's the new modern NFL. It's a special package that Sean Payton has put together, and that guy, maybe more than anybody, has been a trailblazer into the new era of the NFL with offense and spread it out and getting guys in space. Sean Payton's been here doing that for over a decade. Like, everyone's talking about Sean McVay changing the game and the Chiefs with Mahomes and all of and the Eagles, but the Saints have been around here doing this for over a decade. So that's really where it started the most. Anyways, little football there for you. I wanted to get into something that's not football related. Somebody asked me about a ranking that I did a couple of weeks ago, and it was funny because as I was doing that, I was looking at another ranking that someone had put together online. So I felt that, you know, I might as well share it on there. So I do these rankings once in a while. You know, they're usually pretty silly, and today, you know, we're getting close to the end of summer. This is an item that you might not spend too much more time with before we get to winter. But ice cream toppings. Quickly. I just want to run through my top 10 ice cream toppings because a lot of people on Twitter think I'm a little crazy for some of these, and I think I am in the right. So quickly, top 10 ice cream toppings, according to me, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. Number 10, pretzels. I'm a big texture guy. I like to have the salty with the sweet, and that gives me both. So some crumbled up pretzels over the top, delicious, especially when paired with some nice hot fudge or something, because then as the fudge cools, it hardens over the pretzel. It's like a chocolate-covered pretzel on top of your ice cream. What could be better than that? Number 9, chocolate sprinkles. A couple people, including Jeff on Twitter, told me that was a little overrated. I get it. They're not doing much for you taste-wise, but, again, texture. Getting a little bit of crunch. You're getting a little something different. You know how many you're going to get in each spoonful. Number 8 is banana. I don't like bananas. I don't think they're even a real fruit. I've said that before. They're not juicy to me. Then you're not a fruit. But on ice cream, delicious. Banana split, chop them up, you put them over the top, great. Broken up chocolate chip cookies for me at 7. Not Oreos. I'm making that distinction. Sean, Jim, I saw your tweets. Not Oreos. Chocolate chip cookies, Chips Ahoy, or if they're homemade, even better. Number 6, Reese's Pieces. That's a simple one. You can understand that one. Get a little peanut butter with the chocolate. Number 5, Candy Bar Pieces. I put that as 1. And preferably Kit Kat or Twix. Those are my top 2 candy bars that I would like over ice cream. Number 4, Caramel Sauce. Then, this one was the one that was debatable. And this is why I wanted to bring up this in the first place. Maraschino Cherries. I love Maraschino Cherries. I'm putting like 3 or 4. If I'm ever making a sundae, 3 or 4 maraschino cherries. Load them up. A little chocolate sprinkled over the top. I'll do the cherries before the sauce. You know, because typically, like, you see them in sundaes in commercials and whatnot, and you'll see them, like, right at the top. It's kind of like the final piece to the puzzle. I don't need it to be. I just put them right in there. I don't need to wait until the end. Put them right in there. Number 2 for me is Magic Shell. If you're not familiar with Magic Shell, Google it, get it, go to the grocery store, get it, it's delicious. It's basically chocolate syrup that hardens, and it makes the shell, and it's, oh, delicious. And then number one, which I think should be undisputed, number one is hot fudge. The temperature difference between the ice cream and the hot fudge, it makes a very nice combination. So that's my top 10 there, ice cream toppings. Just because I was getting a lot of feedback on Twitter, I felt I should share that with the listeners that are not there on Twitter. Mostly because I want you to text in and let me know if I'm crazy for putting maraschino cherries number 3. I don't know why I'm getting so much hate on that. Why? It's decorative in the first place, so it makes it look nicer. And I think they're delicious. Is it crazy to say that maraschino cherries are delicious? Maybe I'll put that in a poll. I don't think it is. All right, it's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. I'm going to get full speed ahead right back into the Bills after this. 803-0550 for your calls here on WGR.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
I grew up like most kids, worried I couldn't bench 2 plates, that I wouldn't fit in, that I wouldn't find love. Then I discovered partying, and suddenly all those worries went to the wayside. I didn't need love. I had keg stands. I discovered I was great at raging, and it revealed wonderful things about myself. I could relate to bros regardless of what kind of bro they were. I could be at a party and moon people and everyone would laugh, you know, be witty. Or I could play beer pong and compete with real integrity. In short, I fulfilled my potential.
The Nightcap on WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Holy cow with this Packers-Raiders game in Winnipeg. I mean, holy cow. This is when you know it's truly a money grab. Instead of canceling the game because the field is not too proper etiquette, they're going to play in a shortened field. Packers TV broadcast just said that head coach Matt LaFleur will not play his starters and the game will be on a shorter field. So, all that money that was divvied up by football fans in Winnipeg, where the cheapest ticket on Ticketmaster was $127. Those people are going to get backups and only backups for the whole game on a shortened, not even real NFL field. How do you not? You got to, in that situation, to me, you have to cancel the game and offer everybody a refund. Or at the very least, they should still offer people a refund. Because that's outrageous to me. Could you imagine, like, I don't know, what would be a similar type of event that would be here? Like, imagine a bowl game came to Buffalo and something went wrong with the field, and instead of rescheduling the game or postponing it or canceling it altogether and offering a refund, they said, okay, well, you paid your ticket, so you're stuck there, and we're going to play the game on a 75-yard field. Like, what? It's just going to look weird. It's going to be weird. And I think it's such a bad job by the NFL. One, not to have it ready to go by the time you got there. And two, to really reach this decision after the fact. So that's happening. I'm thinking fantasy, though, right now for the second hour here, because I've got a couple of drafts still to go. And by the way, before actually I get full into fantasy here, bunch of people that want to throw whipped cream into my top 10 ice cream toppings ranking. Not happening. Not a big whipped cream guy. I think it's incredibly overrated. And this might be blasphemous, but, you know, I'll go a strawberry dipped in Cool Whip over whipped cream on almost anything. So I don't know if that means I like Cool Whip more than whipped cream. That might be a treasonous statement, like someone's saying right now on the text line, but not a big whipped cream guy. Doesn't belong in my top 10. All right, anyways, back to fantasy. So there was a conversation earlier today on the afternoon show about the fifth overall pick. Mike Schoep is the fifth overall pick in a draft, and that generally is about the range when you hit a territory of players that are all about, they're not all about the same, but it's all about preference at some point. Once you get past Barkley, once you get past Kamara, once you get past McCaffrey, four now is really where that is. It used to be five, but once Elliott now had this contract dispute, you can't really trust he's going to be on the field. To me, I would not take him fourth. I don't even know if I'd take him in the first round, but he's still going around there. So what do you do past that? If you have the fourth pick, if you have the fifth pick, if you have the sixth pick, to me, you would want to trade down. If that's not made available to you, then what do you do? And I'm actually warming up to the idea, and this might be a bold take, but I would start thinking about Travis Kelce. I almost never go tight end that early. In fact, I never have gone tight end that early. I've never picked a tight end probably before the third round in any draft I've ever been in my entire life. But here's a spot where I might start to think about it. You're not going to get him on the way back and in a mid-first round pick. He is the number one target on his team, which is the most productive offense in football. Even if he's not the number one target, if Tyreek Hill supplants him in that, which generally, you know, probably won't happen because Hill's more of a boom or bust type of player, even though he does it a lot. Kelce has a certain floor. He's a certain amount of safe. He actually might be the safest of any guy after pick four. For me, I would go David Johnson fourth, and then I would maybe even start to think about Kelce, which a couple of hours ago to me was insane, but now that I've thought about it a little bit more, yeah, Kelce. Like, I can get on board with that, because who else are you going to? There's risk in almost every other player, and if you got a fantasy draft coming up, there's probably anyone that hasn't had one yet is probably going to have it either this weekend or the next weekend after that. And if that's you and you have a pick like this, first round, even second round, minimize risk as much as possible, because all of these guys you're going to draft are going to be studs if they're on the field. That's why they're being picked that high. Where's the risk? Elliott's got a tremendous amount of risk. That's why I'm not taking him. You look at Beckham. He's got a certain amount of risk, a new team. He had an injury at the end of last year. Target share. They got a lot of other weapons. You don't know where that's going to go. I think Beckham's going to be great, but there's a certain amount of risk there. How about Julio Jones? A couple of injuries throughout his career. Now, he's played through them, but that would be a little bit of worry for me. How about Devontae Adams? He's to me, the number one wide receiver in fantasy. But part of the risk there is, if anything happens to Aaron Rodgers, his value is cut in half. Cut in half. DeAndre Hopkins, same thing. But to me, Hopkins is a better overall talent, less risk with him. That's why I'd rather pick him a few picks after the fact than take the risk on Adams, who I do think will have a better season, but there's less risk there. I'd rather be picking Hopkins 8th than Adams 5th. Juju Smith-Schuster. What does he look like as the number one wide receiver in Pittsburgh? What happens when all the double teams come his way instead of Antonio Brown's? Le'Veon Bell. The Jets. What does he look like on an offense that's not elite? Because in Pittsburgh, he's had that afforded to him throughout his career. What happens if the Jets aren't that good as an offense? What does Bell look like with that? Because he had a pretty severe luxury over his career with an offensive line that allowed him to be as patient as a runner as he is. If you ever watch Le'Veon Bell, you'll see how patient he is. He was afforded that luxury because of how good the Steelers' offensive line is. If he doesn't get that same type of production in front of him from the Jets, what's he going to look like? Tyreek Hill. If one more thing comes out about Tyreek Hill, I have to imagine he's getting a big suspension. Nick Chubb, even. I love Nick Chubb, but Kareem Hunt's coming back week 8. And what does that look like? So to me, your goal in your fantasy draft, if you have a first-round pick, minimize risk as much as possible, even if you think another guy has a higher ceiling. Start thinking about the ceiling later on, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and the rest of the draft. When you're in the first and second round, that player is going to be great if everything goes well. So minimize the risk as much as possible. And that's why right now, with all of this Ezekiel Elliott stuff going on, him and Jerry Jones going back, not even really going back and forth, just Jerry Jones just lobbing insults over and over, one of which was signing a linebacker who didn't need to sign to send a message. I don't know. But I would not trust that Elliott's going to be back for week 1. I'm not sure I would trust that he's going to play all season. And if that's the case, I would hope Le'Veon Bell owners from last year learned their lesson. But maybe others would not be wary to that risk. Because if you draft him in the first round and he does not play, that's basically your season. It is extremely difficult to win a championship in fantasy football if you get 0 out of your first round pick. Extremely difficult. And that's why, to me, David Johnson might be going a little bit lower than he should be. Because everyone's thinking about the last 2 years. David Johnson's been a top 5 pick 2 years in a row. 2 years ago, he was the consensus number 1 pick. Last year, he was a top 4 pick. What happened in that first year when he was number 1 overall all the time? Wrist injury, out for the year. Almost nobody that drafted him first overall was going to win their championship. Especially when their best player would have been 24th overall, wherever you're picking. Then last year, he was a top pick. Now, he wasn't terrible at all. He was the running back 9, actually. But where you picked him, you might not have been winning your league with that. You probably weren't. I would advise anyone that's drafting in that range to forget about that. Because if he stays healthy, which it was a wrist injury, I'd like to be able to think that that's not going to be a repetitive thing. It's not like a knee issue that seems to always be lingering like we're seeing with Todd Gurley right now. If that's not going to creep back up, the injury concern, last year, the biggest reason he finished as running back 9 instead of running back 1, 2, 3, or 4 was that offense was the least creative and one of the worst offenses we have seen in years in the NFL. Horrible. So bad that it got the coach fired in 1 year. It got the offensive coordinator fired in half a year. That's how bad that offense was. Despite that offense being that bad, with almost no opportunity to score touchdowns or get out in open space, it was all I formation right up the middle every single time. Still finished as running back 9. Which is not that shabby. It's not what you wanted, but it's not too shabby. It's still a running back 1. This year, big difference for me. That's why David Johnson, like, he's going 8th, 7th, or 8th. Is it fair for me to call him a sleeper? Because I think he should be going 3, 4 picks higher than that. 3 picks. I wouldn't put him higher than 4th. This year, new, young, fresh, creative offense with Cliff Kingsbury as the head coach, Kyler Murray, who to me should be a certain upgrade from what they had at quarterback last season, some added weapons around him, Christian Kirk in his second year. They just signed Michael Crabtree. They added a bunch of other receivers like Andy Isabella in the second round, Hakeem Butler in the fourth. This Keyshawn Johnson kid, who they also drafted in the sixth round, has maybe been the best of all of them, and he was a sixth-round pick. And, I'm not going to call Charles Clay an upgrade, but they literally had no tight end last year, and I guess they added Charles Clay. I won't call it a tight end, but they added him. So all of that being said, there's a better infrastructure around him. There's a better type of offense around him that suits his skill set. To me, David Johnson, if you get a chance to pick him fourth, for me, it's a no-brainer. For me, it's a no-brainer. I would pick him fourth 10 times out of 10. But that's the range where people kind of, it's about preference. Some people will pick Kelsey. Some people will pick Michael Thomas, another guy that doesn't have a lot of risk. Some people will pick Beckham or Juju or James Conner or Le'Veon Bell or Tyreek Hill or Nick Chubb or DeAndre Hopkins. Like, there are 10 to 12 guys that you could present an argument to me with why they should go fourth overall. And most people will be on board with you. Hey, that's fair. For me, I'll get there for fifth. Fifth overall, I'll listen to your argument. Fourth, I am going 10 times out of 10, David Johnson. So that'd be my suggestion to anybody out there that is still thinking about, all right, who should I pick for that? If you missed my conversation in the first hour, went over a lot, like who I'm looking for the Bills tomorrow to kind of take that one final step, that one final leap, that one final hurdle they need to get over to make this active roster. There's a bunch of guys that I think are on the verge of that on the offense. I mentioned, I think Jason Kroom needs to get back on the field pronto, or he might be bound to be cut here. I think Marcus Murphy might have an opportunity now to make this team, which I didn't really think was there before. There's an opportunity for Duke Williams after his performance last week. Isaiah McKenzie, I think, should be on this team. I didn't really mention anybody on the defense, and somebody texted in about Daryl Johnson. And I haven't thought about Daryl Johnson too much for this question, I guess because I think he's going to be on this team. It's hard for me to see him not being on this team. It's funny. You look at the Bills' draft picks, and all of them seem to be doing pretty well. I haven't heard much of Vochon Joseph, the fifth-round pick, so I don't really know about him. But Ed Oliver, I mean, he's getting a lot of praise. Devin Singletary is getting a lot of praise. Dawson Knox has been injured, so it's been tough for him on that. Both seven-round picks have got a lot of praise with Daryl Johnson and Tommy Sweeney, a tight end. So for Johnson specifically, you know, they kind of have had a hole there at pass rusher. They haven't really had a guy other than Jerry Hughes to get consistent pressure. So I'm not saying he's going to start or anything, but given what he has showed and given what his skill set presents, because he is big and because he's athletic, and he's, I thought, showed a lot of different moves over the course of this preseason. So I don't want to take too much out of a preseason, but when you look really in depth, what are you seeing out of him? And you're seeing several different types of pass rusher moves. He's doing swim moves, spins, he's bull rushing, he's doing a bunch of different things. And that's something that I like to see, because one of the reasons a guy like Shaq Lawson I look at and see not a lot of progress in his game over the years is it seems to me he only has one real move, and it's a bull rush. The snap goes, and Shaq Lawson is trying to run through the tackle. And if he doesn't run through him, then he's probably not getting to the quarterback. Whereas Daryl Johnson, I'm not saying he's going to be better than Shaq Lawson, but what would give me optimism about him is he's trying different things almost every single snap to try to get to the quarterback. There's creativity there, and I like that. And I'd like to see him on this team over guys like Eddie Yarborough, and I guess Eddie Yarborough would be the guy. Like, if it came down to those two, I think Eddie's been a nice player for a couple years here, but nothing special. And maybe Daryl Johnson, you know, maybe not likely, he was a seventh-round pick, but maybe, just maybe, he could be something special. So I would take the shot on that, and I think he's definitely warranted making this roster after what's happened. There's not really a guy on defense for me for this. Like, a guy that needs one great performance, and maybe he can make the team. Like, maybe that would be the last hurdle. I think it's kind of figured out, for the most part. Like, cornerback. White, obviously here. Wallace, obviously here. Kevin Johnson, obviously here. how much question is there past that? Like Captain Munnerlin, like is he not going to make this team at this point? I guess him and Saran Neal will be battling for a roster spot. So there's something. Safety, Poyer, Hyde, Coleman. Like, there's not a lot I'm wondering about on the defense right now other than Daryl Johnson. The one thing I'd like to wonder about, but I don't think it's in the cards, would be Latulale. Personally, given what Ed Oliver should be, given what Jordan Phillips was last year, and given where they drafted Harrison Phillips, I'd like to get to a spot where those can be my three defensive tackles and I don't have to worry about having a star Latulale on my team. The highest paid player on the team, a run plugger. Jordan Phillips, big, more athletic. So I don't think there's a chance Latulale is getting cut, but I guess that would be the guy I would have pointed out. Hey, if I can move on from somebody, if there's somebody's roster spot should be in question, who would it be? For me, it would be Star Latulale, but I just don't see that happening. 803-0550 is the phone number. As I mentioned, I want to get into Jeff Legwold when we come back. One Bills Live. He had a really good interview earlier with the guys, so we'll play that back after the break. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. If you want to get any thoughts in, any calls in before we get to that, do it now. It's the Nightcap with
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.